WLFP Braddock.
Good morning, Pittsburgh diners and travelers, and good afternoon to our overseas listeners.
Miss Ann, you sound like you're half asleep this morning.
Well, I am half asleep.
Is that what it is?
I am half asleep, and I can't hear very well. Can you hear me?
Okay. We hope the listeners can hear us. We can't hear ourselves, but that's okay, because we're here.
Yes, and you're listening to On the Menu, as hopefully you always do, and we're going to be sort of catching up with a lot of our travels in this program.
Good. Sounds like a good idea.
And we're going to start with, back in Charleston, Cyprus. On the Menu is once again in Charleston, South Carolina, a place that we've come to love. And we're at a wonderful restaurant called Cyprus with an amazing young chef called Craig Deal. Hello, Craig.
Hello.
Tell us a little bit about your amazing background. When I heard that you received a stand mixer at age 14, I almost fainted.
It was a little bit earlier than that, but growing up, I had a huge love of food with my mom, cooking at home, and that's where it all started. And from that point, it was kind of embedded that I was good at cooking. So pursuing it as a career was not only the right thing to do, but it was what made sense as far as I loved doing it and just had a great love for it.
Now, you are from central Pennsylvania, I understand. Danville?
That is correct.
How did you get the southern accent?
I've been here for 12 years, so it's kind of my secondary home now. So I can always say that I'm from Pennsylvania, but I'm now a southerner.
And we'll talk about a little bit about his cooking philosophy, and you'll understand that he truly is. I want to say that he's being shy about this. He started working at Magnolia's, was it?
Yeah.
At 17, while he was still a culinary student at Johnson & Wales. And they trusted him so much that he opened this fabulous restaurant that we're in now, Cyprus. And at age 23, he became big-time executive chef. How did that happen?
Lots of hard work, perseverance, and dedication to always pushing not only myself, but the entire staff in which we have here at Cyprus to pursue doing better food, buying the best ingredients that we can, working with local farmers and local fishermen, and just doing the best jobs that we can.
Now, describe, we're in an historic building that's been made into a wow of contemporary design. What was this building? And describe the environment we're in.
Well, the building dates back to the early 1800s, and I'm not an exact historian, but it used to be a mercantile building. Before we actually acquired the building, it was an art gallery on the first floor with the evergreen freight tracking on the second floor. And we figured that if we didn't turn this into this great restaurant, somebody else would. And if you're going to do it, we did it right the first time. So,
well, there are two floors, and this is a wall, listeners, an absolute wall, floor to ceiling, first floor to ceiling, second floor, of, I believe it's 5,000 bottles of wine.
That's correct. Lots of wine. This is just for our red wines. We keep all our white wines in refrigeration in the back, but for the most part, all our wines in the back. If you look to our back, we have all of our magnums and all our vintage wines.
Well, it's stunning, and there's wonderful color in this room. There's a private room in the second floor that overlooks this, what do you call this kitchen?
The show kitchen or the exhibition kitchen.
I read in the cookbook it was called an expo kitchen, and I had never heard that term, so I was a little confused. Tell us a little bit about what your philosophy of food is.
My main philosophy of food is not just getting your hands on the best ingredients that you can and producing food that has a range of flavors. And a lot of that comes from my love of more Asian-ish food, which is hot, sour, salty, sweet. and at the same time tying in with our local ingredients, southern ingredients, but my real background comes from classical French cuisine. And I'm from stocks and sauces, use every single piece of any product that you get your hands on and make it unbelievable.
Like the squash blossom butter.
That is a good one. Of course, it was an ingredient that we received from the chef's garden, and it came in, and they were badly beaten and battered and bruised. And it was, well, they're not to the point where we can't use them, but we just can't use them as a beautiful garnishing. So we decided that if we pureed them up, added some butter, it would be great to do them that way.
Farmer Jones is not going to like the fact that they arrived that way. Chef, what gave you this great love for the Asian flavors?
Well, growing up, I never really did any eating of Chinese or Asian-type foods. And coming to Charleston, that was kind of more of a melting pot than a low-country pot, where you had Asian markets and you could go and you could buy all of your Asian ingredients. And because we were still in the South, it was given us the ability to pair those things together, where I really started creating my true love of putting the sweets and the salties together with more of our local fare. And that's where a lot of what we did came out. But at the same time, through passions of reading books understanding what chefs really look for in food is flavor, and the layering of multiple layers is what really gave me the true love for it.
Well, you certainly have a variety of influences. Even in this cookbook, which we're going to talk about, it's called Cypress, and you state specifically that you wrote this book for the home cook to be able to cook your kind of food, you know, elevate their cooking to a level, well, you know, it's not going to be the same level as Cypress, but up it.
Yeah, it was basically, it was written to, not that everybody would or not that everybody will, but if they wanted to, they really could, through photojournalistic approach sometimes the less is more in the writing philosophy, the more complicated you make the word sound and everything, the more unlikely that I feel somebody is willing to actually try it. So it was lesser status of actual writing, but more of what I can't explain in writing, I'm going to have photographed. And that was my main philosophy of saying, if we're going to do a book, let's do it that's unique and different than every other cookbook that you always look at. And I think we did a good thing.
Well, I mean, I find it absolutely fascinating, starting with your discussion of what should be in the larder, because this makes my larder look pretty pathetic. You have, do you think that the home cook is going to be making all these different stocks? And
you know, it's not that they are going to, but in order to really create the food that you know and love in restaurants, you really need to have a fond love for stocks, a fond love for your compound butters and creating these things. Because if you're not willing to do it, then you're only ever going to create half the food the way that the restaurant does create it.
Well, I mean, it's a fascinating larder. I mean, it tells you how to make all these different stocks. Here's a smoked pork stock, which I would have never thought of. Corn stock, I never heard of that.
We use our corn cobs. Basically, once we strip the corn kernels off the cob fresh, we have these bones, as we call them. And from those bones, we get this beautifully sweet stock that we can either cook grits with, or we can make corn purees or corn soups. And it's phenomenal. And normally it goes in the trash can, but as, like I mentioned earlier, we try to use everything that we possibly can in a unique and useful way.
Now, when we were talking about Asian things, I don't want listeners to get the idea that that this is sort of just a wild fusion kind of a restaurant, because it's not. Everything is very controlled in terms of how you give it a little snap with the Asian flavorings. But you tell us about, you take really traditional dishes such as shrimp and grits, and updated. What do you do?
Yeah, I'm not an old school Charleston. I don't know what shrimp and grits used to be, but I know what shrimp and grits can be, and it can be anything that you put your mind to it. And in our case, we always have lamb saddles available, so we always have scraps. So it's, well, let's make lamb sausage. And from that, well, let's do shrimp and grits, and what goes with lamb? Well, you think of lamb with mint and rosemary. You also think of goat cheese. So we did goat cheese grits, and we did shrimp and sausage with rosemary and mint in the tomato broth, which is the flavor pairings are more about the lamb than it really is about the shrimp. But all of those sweetness variances on the shrimp tie it all together.
Before we go any further, I want to just make sure, Craig, that our listeners know where you are, what your website is, and also I want to tell them that this book that you wrote, that it's on our website, www.onthemenuradio.com, and they can go to OTM Bookshelf and order it right off of our page there. And I want to say that it's, even listeners, if you just read this, you're going to learn a great deal in details and stuff that you always thought you might know but really never could understand. He explains it. He writes so lucidly, you'll be amazed. Now, what is your website for the restaurant?
The website for the restaurant is www.magnolias/blossom/cypress.com. I guess that would be dashes.
Yeah, dashes instead of slashes. So, but put this the restaurant on your to-do list for Charleston, South Carolina. Now I'd like to be a little selfish, and I want to ask you, do you have any idea what you're going to feed us tonight? Because I'm ready. Tell us.
Well, hopefully it'll be from our seasonal side, and I definitely recommend the soft-shell crabs. Right now, they are not coming out of Charleston, but they are coming out of North Carolina, and they are coming in just about every day of the week, and they're unbelievable. We have two different pairings this evening, one of them being right out of the cookbook, which is the braised veal breast and the tempura fried soft-shell crab in the form of a veal Oscar, which is a playful version of an old classic with the asparagus and the béarnaise, and it's probably be my recommendation for you to have this evening.
Well, it sounds good, and as I said, we're ready. Thank you for taking the time out just before service to talk to us.
Well, you're welcome.
Any last word?
Just have fun with cooking, enjoy eating great food, and share it with friends.
That's great. Well, thank you, Cypress. The soft show was wonderful. Now we'll take a break.
The internet is crucial to your business. Everybody knows this, but did you know Nidhogg is the company you should call for internet service? Nidhogg, personal web page hosting for less. Business web page hosting, Nidhogg offers both Unix and NT server support. Nidhogg is the company you should call for dedicated internet access. Nidhogg offers DSL for high speed, low cost, always on access. DSL is great. It means no more dial-up. Oh, by the way, do you remember that thing called the telephone? Do you remember when people used phone lines to access the internet? Oh, I'm sorry, you still use dial-up? Well, Nidhogg does that too. Local access telephone numbers? Okay, I don't understand it all either, but I do know that I need it, and I know where to get it. Nidhogg, Nidhogg.com, 412-661-5917. That's 661-5917, or log on, Nidhogg.com. Internet the Nidhogg way.
This Tuesday, be there as Dog the Bounty Hunter is sent to prison. This time, on the outside looking in.
I had to go back one more time.
Find out what made the star of the A&E hit series the man he is today.
I started to tell myself I can be anybody I want to be.
From ex-con to icon. It's the A&E special, A Man Called Dog. Tuesday at 9, 8 central, only on A&E.
Welcome back. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. Check out our website, onthemenuradio.com, and we're in Charleston. Peter, can you clue up?
Yeah, I can.
You get a clue and cue it up.
The interesting thing about Charleston is that many of the restaurants are all on one street, all in the space of about 200 or 300 yards altogether.
And owned by the same people.
Yeah, and well, owned by two. There are two rival organizations. We're working with one of them today. Previously, we've talked about Slightly North Abroad, which is another group of restaurants in Charleston.
Coming up later.
And is that coming up later?
Yes.
There we go. Well, that's wonderful news. So Blossom is an earlier creation of the same group that owns Magnolias and also owns Cypress. But it's open for lunch, and that's when we were there, and we talked to the chef at Blossom.
I'm talking to a redhead, and as all of you know, over and over again, I say how much I've always wanted to be a redhead. And, of course, Adam Close is sitting here, and he knows I would never be a redhead. Is that true?
Well, I mean, I guess you could be if you wanted to. You have so many options these days.
Well, anyhow, getting serious, Adam is executive chef of Blossoms, which is the third and final restaurant that we've been doing on this tour to Charleston, South Carolina, of the Hospitality Management Group. Welcome, and thank you for talking to us, and thank you for an extraordinarily fulfilling lunch.
Oh, you're very welcome, and welcome to our quaint little town here in Charleston. We're glad to have you, and I'm glad you enjoyed everything, and definitely had your fill, from what I hear. We appreciate you guys coming down.
Now, what exactly is Blossom? I mean, it's billed, it has a funny logo of a fish that's sort of like a flower. And it started out, I understand, as Mediterranean, but now is seafood, but it's more than that, isn't it?
Well, you know, it really is. I mean, I think the emphasis, obviously, if you look at the menu, is seafood, and it's, you know, we only, on the dinner menu especially, we only have two dishes that are not seafood. I think the thing with Blossom is the emphasis on local ingredients, local fish, local produce, and the support of our local farmers and purveyors. Another thing I think that's special about this restaurant is the fact that we're multidimensional, that we're not bound really by any specific style of food. We can sort of do, and as the menu shows, lots of different things, and lots of different influences, certainly in my background, and so that comes through in the menu, and I never really have had any restraints as far as what I could do food-wise, and so to me, that's been a great opportunity, and definitely glad to be at a place like that where, you know, I have sort of freedom and creative freedom.
Now, you are a boomerang. You are a do we call it a boomerang or a prodigal? You were here right out of Johnson Wales Culinary School, and then you went off to Atlanta, and then you came back. What was that all about?
Well, in a sense, actually, the move was more related to my spouse than myself. I sort of, for the past several years, have been kind of following her around the southeastern United States, and in the process, gotten to work in some fantastic restaurants. I think that the great thing about it, sort of our partnership, is that both of our jobs lend themselves to cities, larger cities that tend to have meet both of our needs. You know, her needs as far as her line of work and mine, and so we were sort of able to come to an agreement in these moves, and it benefited the, you know, both of us together. So.
I mean, you had some really great experience. You were at Panos
and Paul's and Buckhead.
What's he like?
Pano? Pano is kind of like the Greek godfather, is sort of how I would describe him. He's in control of an empire, a huge company in Atlanta, and he a lot like Hospitality Management Group Incorporated here in Charleston, sort of started the restaurant scene, so to speak, in Atlanta, just like, you know, this company has done for Charleston. Before both of these companies were established, there was really nothing, you know, I say nothing, but next to nothing as far as good restaurants are concerned. So, you know, he's a very interesting guy. He's very direct because he can be. He doesn't beat around the bush. He'll tell you exactly how it is. He knows what he's doing. He knows what he wants. He's a perfectionist, and he's a very good teacher. And he knows a lot about food. And he's very, very hardworking and dedicated. And so anybody who comes across him, and especially people that have worked for him, have the utmost respect for him.
So why are you back in Charleston?
I really couldn't stay away, I guess, so to speak. We enjoyed this town so much, and living here before, I think, you know, the move to Atlanta was good because it pulled me away, at least, from my comfort zone that I had sort of established here in Charleston, and got me some much needed experience in other types of cuisine and working for other chefs, and it was great for my career and for hers as well.
Adam, I've been reading things about you, such as you have cultivated a talent for innovative yet classic cuisine with robust flavors. Could you explain what that means and give us a couple of concrete examples along the lines of what we ate today?
Well, I think it just is my particular. I'm kind of a minimalist, I think, when it comes to my food. I try to stick towards classical preparations and presentations. I think a lot of things get sort of lost in translation when you go too far with presentation and even preparation of food. I know there's a lot of people that would disagree with that, and a lot of trends sort of in the culinary industry these days are leaning towards finding new ways. Maybe it's, I don't know whether it's out of boredom or just, you know, continually trying to change the mold. But I sort of lean towards, you know, the classic preparations when it comes to food. But at the same time, flavor combinations, more so, I think, than presentation, are done in an innovative fashion here. A good example of a classic dish would be the swordfish with the red wine braised lentils. Very simply prepared, but very particular recipe, one that's measured out in weight instead of volume to make sure that the amount of wine and the amount of onions, even carrots, smoked bacon and all of those things are exactly the same every time it's made, exactly the way that I want it to be. But still a very classic and simple preparation, simple presentation, you know, swordfish cooked well, but just simply seared, finished in the oven. No stacking of ingredients, you know, no fancy gastriques or purees or sauces or no sous vide or anything of that nature, but you know, good in the same respect. And I would say a more innovative dish would be from the dinner menu, the tuna carpaccio, which is, you know, as that word comes up, it comes again, that classic, which is a classic dish, but it's nothing, you know, it sort of shakes off its older garnishments like Parmesan cheese and whatnot, and it's sort of wears kind of a Southwest garnishments, lime juice, avocado, a little shallot. So I think in some examples like the carpaccio, I've taken classic dishes and put a twist on them, but in the same way, there's plenty of you know, I think the classic is not only classic food, but classic preparations and simple, you know, sort of getting down to the nitty gritty of what makes food really good. I'm sorry, but not getting too, you know, too carried away with trying to break the mold.
Well, I mean, I enjoyed the mussels. I mean, I always liked mussels, and the mussels had a basic standard ingredient list except for capers. I'd never had the capers with the mussels, and I intend to try that. Who actually comes to Blossom? What is your clientele like?
Well, I think being in a town that we're in, you know, we're obviously going to get a large tourist crowd, and you know, we welcome them every year. They're a large part of our business, and certain times of the year, it definitely shows. You know, especially in the springtime with all of our when the weather is perfect, a lot of our local garden tours and house tours that we do for these old historic homes brings quite a few people into the city. I wouldn't necessarily call it a beach town, so to speak. I think just the history and the beauty and of the city is what brings people primarily. And so we definitely get a large rush of people who are not local. But in the same sense, we have a large local following that we've always had ever since this restaurant's been open. And I think it's as strong now as it's ever been, which says a lot for a restaurant, I think, located in this part of town where you have so many tourists coming and going, to have a local following, too, and for them to keep coming back time after time after time, even when it's incredibly busy and packed with non-local people. We appreciate that both businesses coming from both ends.
I might mention that you have the centerpiece of this restaurant is a pizza oven, and you make all of your own pizza, and you make your pasta from scratch also. I know you're happy to have all the creative freedom that you have in this restaurant, but I'm going to do a question. If, in fact, you could have your very own dream restaurant on your own, what kind of restaurant would that be?
I've actually had this question asked to me quite a few times, along with questions similar to it, like, what is your favorite type of cuisine to cook?
I'm sorry, I thought I was being original.
that is an original question. It's just sort of all along the lines of similar questions that for so many years I've had such trouble answering, and I really, really don't know why that is, but maybe it's just because I'm not yet, come full circle in my style or whatever, but it's becoming easier for me to answer now, and I think the simplest answer to that question is it would be an American restaurant. And the reason why I say that is I had a professor in school a long time ago ask me a question that I've had that I also had trouble answering, and that was, if somebody asked you what an American person looks like, what would you say? And I didn't know how to answer that. What does an American person look like? There's so many different types of people in America, and I think American cuisine is a reflection of that, because there's so many different types of people in America. American cuisine has sort of asserted itself as a combination of a lot of different influences. And I've had the pleasure to work, with chefs under a lot of different influences. I did the Southern cuisine down here in Charleston, and I've gone to Atlanta and worked in primarily a French restaurant and an Italian restaurant. So, my dream restaurant would be an American restaurant and a compilation of...
Oh, I think we cut him off a little bit. And I guess we cut off this segment by saying it's time to take a break.
The flagship station of the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. This is 1550 WLFP, Pittsburgh.
Hi, friends. I'm Phil Marcus, the host of Real Estate 101, heard every Saturday here on The Edge, AM 1550. If you've been thinking about selling your house or buying a house, I'd like to speak with you. Choosing the right agent is one of the first and most important steps in the process of buying or selling real estate. It's critical that you choose an agent who has the knowledge and experience to not only find that perfect new home for you, but to also be able to guide you step by step through the often complicated real estate process. If you don't already have a realtor, may I offer my services? I've been a real estate agent in Pittsburgh for almost 30 years. I'm a life member of the Realtors Association, and I'm proud to say that I've earned both the GRI and the coveted CRS professional designations. Won't you call me at RE/MAX Heritage? The phone number is 412-241-4200, extension 154, or my email address is phil@philmarcus.com. That's 412-241-4200, extension 154, or phil@philmarcus.com. Let's talk.
We're continuing with On the Menu.
Are we back?
And we are back.
Oh, we're on the air again.
We are on the air again.
That was a surprise.
Yeah. Now, we worked hard in this trip. That doesn't sound like it because we're just running our interviews, but we worked hard.
We did work hard. This is in a very real sense, we did Hospitality Management Group House Backwards.
Yes,
because
their
most recent restaurant is Cypress, dinner only. We should have mentioned that Blossom is lunch and dinner. But the happiest-looking faces in all of Charleston were the diners at Magnolia's, which was the first restaurant developed by the Hospitality Management Group. It's funny, Darren Bagman, who's the executive chef of the whole bunch, actually met us at lunch before we interviewed Adam Close at Blossom.
Mm-hmm.
And we've, of course, talked to him before when we were in Charleston for the Charleston Food and Wine Festival. But he was the chef who kicked off Magnolia's, which is, I'm sure, the most locally patronized of all the restaurants, because everybody there seems to know the menu. Everybody has an idea of exactly what they want. We actually went there for the second time on this trip, and we ordered exactly the same thing as we ordered the first time we were there. And I'm sure we're going to go over that with the chef.
Don Drake is executive chef of Magnolia's, and I would say it's an iconic restaurant in Charleston. Hello, Don.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
You were originally not a native son. You were born in New York, and you went to the graduated from the Culinary Institute of America, and then you traveled around the world. I was impressed that you were part of the team at Quilted Giraffe in Manhattan, and then I was more impressed by the fact that you drifted around making stopovers in London, Australia, and Hawaii. And tell us why. What were you following when you were doing that?
I guess I was following my desire to travel and see the world, and I've always been an avid surfer, so wherever I could go surf and work and travel, I pursued those ventures. I've always wanted to go through Europe, and that seemed to be the best venture, and having a friend there on the continent already invited me over there, so I went to visit London, thinking one of the great cities, which, always have fond memories of it now, but always thought that, surfing could carry me. And my cooking skills could help me pay the rent. So wherever, I just sort of decided to be a vagabond for a little while and see the country and, work for some great chefs and get to taste some really good food and see some excitement.
You're skipping over your backdoor theory. Tell us about your backdoor approach.
For all those future-to-be chefs or wannabe chefs, always my philosophy on this one is always go through the back door and ask for the chef. I mean, don't go through the front door because, the front of the house manager might tell you, hey, he's busy, he's not here, or somebody's not here. But that way, you go in the back door, ask for him personally, and if he tells you, when can you start, tell him today. I always bring my knives with me, be ready to work. Because, sometimes, especially when working in a foreign country, you only get one try at it. And you got to be ready for that try.
Now, your bio says that you worked also with Roy. At Roy's?
Right, Roy Yamaguchi. That was back in the early days when there was just used to be one Roy's. And Gordon Hopkins was the chef de cuisine at the time. And went in there, had dinner there the night before. But prior to that, I had a temporary stop. One of my old roommates from school had a house out on the North Shore. So we used to catch some waves and used to flip pizzas and ride my bicycle to the Amico's back and forth. And then I had to get a sheriff's job, so I went into Roy's after night, and I told him I liked his food, and Gordon goes, what do you like about it? And then I mentioned, I like the Asian French twist to it, and again, he goes, when can you start? And I said, well, I have to give these guys 2 weeks' notice at D'Amico's, and I was there for, quite some time, and I learned a lot. Roy was on the cutting edge of the superstar chefs-to-be. He took Asian French food to a new level, that people haven't seen before. Not too fancy, but this really unique, bold flavor taste, and brought it to a new level.
Now, how did you take and apply all this experience to Southern cooking? You landed in South Carolina in 1991, and you are known for Southern cooking here, but I can taste a little Hawaii in there. What else do you do?
Well, I think I had a good teacher here with Donald Berrickman, and I think what I've taken was my roots and my schooling and just my travel experience, and good food is good food no matter what continent you're cooking it on or what country you're cooking it on, and you apply the basic principles of and cooking techniques to certain products. And I went from there, but I definitely took Donald's lead. He taught me really quick, what people in the South look for. And I just went with it from there. And, I still learn from the older cooks, the older Southern cooks. I think that, to be able to cook new food, you have to know how to cook old food first. And what we try to do here is take the old Southern food and transport it with the new techniques and this new twist to it, but yet keep close to the Southern roots.
I commented to you before that I was amazed at the portion size, but that's a Southern thing too, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am, it is. Try to never send anybody away from a Southern table hungry. and try to, you know, to, I guess it's just the way it's always has been in the South, and it'd be hard to change that, but, you know, we try to give the people the money's worth.
Don, we just asked you to select what you thought we should try out of the Magnolia's menu, and I marked off what you sent out. Could you run us through and talk a little bit about each dish and maybe why you chose that?
It'd be a pleasure. I tried to give you, without going in two extremes, you know, being lunchtime, to give you a little rounding example, you know, the food at Magnolia's. We had pan-fried chicken livers with caramelized Vidalia onions, country ham, and Madeira sauce. Again, you know, going back to the southern interpretations of modern food, I guess you could see that would be our southern foie gras. But instead of using, you know, duck livers, we use chicken livers and onions and country ham and Madeira sauce. Another twist is our down south egg roll, which is stuffed with collard greens, chicken, tasso, and it's all rolled in a fried collard green and fried. It comes with a red pepper sauce. A pepper sauce, spicy mustard, and peach chutney. And then we had, you know, another southern tradition, fried green tomatoes with white cheddar grits. You know, we get our grits from Tennessee. And a lady called Janie down there, she makes them especially for us and ships them over there to us. And it gets with white cheddar and caramelized onions and tomato butter, which, you know, we squeeze fresh tomatoes and make tomato butter by scratch. And then I think we had one of our famous homemade potato chips with blue cheese, Clemson blue cheese, and onions, which is is another tradition. And then, of course, we had some soft shell crabs that were just came in. So I want you guys to try those. And then we had some squash casserole, which a lady back named Marsha makes. She's been with me for about 10 years, makes some of the best white lily biscuits in the state, if not maybe the South. And so hopefully you got Magnolia's where your mouth meets the South. You get a taste of everything. You know, that's southern and good.
Well, I mean, it certainly was. I wanted to ask you, what is Pirlou?
Pirlou, it's spelled different ways, too. It's P-I-R-L-O-O-O or P-I-R-L-U. Comes in a lot of different things. It's an old southern dish. I first heard of it when I was in Florida. It was an old Menorcan dish, which, you know, the people who came over from Menorca visited St. Augustine back, you know, in, I guess, 1565. Friends of mine used to make it, and I used to go over there for lunch and eat the dinner at his house, had some sweet tea, and she used to make this great Pirlou, which is rice cooked in slowly in a pot with some, they call it dattle peppers, which are peppers indigenous to St. Augustine, Florida. So my adaptation of that is sort of like a jambalaya, but with a Carolina twist on it, and we serve that with like a rice dish with shrimp, vegetables, and we put a piece of flounder over that and some fresh crab meat.
Now, how about people who want to come here, reservation, absolutely, I would think. It's jam crowded every time we're here. I said jammed, by the way.
Yes, we do, you know, require, you know, advance notice as much as possible. But I think, you know, if you can't get in, just keep trying. And, you know, we're open for lunch now, so if you can't get in for dinner, you know, please come try us for lunch.
How about a website?
We do have a website. It's www.magnolias-blossoms-cypress.com.
Well, this has been a pleasure, and we've been to Cypress, now we're here, and I think tomorrow's Blossom, so we're doing the route.
Well, thank you for coming. It's a pleasure meeting both of you two, and good luck in your travels, and please come back and see us again.
It was so funny. I said that we had the same thing we had last time, but I had forgotten that we let the chef choose the items, but it turned out they were exactly the same things that we had had before.
Well,
we had a table full.
Those chips are so addictive. The whole thing is, and people came in, ate a full everything they could put in their mouths,
yes,
and left, and then a whole other crowd kept coming
back. Didn't see any doggy bagging either. They have hearty appetites in Charleston, South Carolina, I can assure you.
Take a break.
Data security and speed can be what puts your business ahead of your competition, but cost is important too. You might be paying every month for bandwidth you don't use. Let's talk about your company's disaster recovery system. Is it as effective and secure as it could be? What are you paying for your T1 line? I'll bet we can offer you a better deal. We're ASP Station, a premier independent server co-location facility and high-speed internet access provider. Virtually unlimited bandwidth, co-location for your backup servers, off-site system backup, and secure access to your equipment 24/7. Check us out on the web at aspstation.net or call us at 412
412-661-6001. Easy number to remember, 412-661-6001. ASP Station, 412-661-6001.
Hello, my name is Kathy Brennan, and I'm the marketing maestro at Acapella Marketing. I help small businesses take their marketing up an octave. Are you trying to grow your business? Would you like to more effectively position yourself versus your competition? Would you like to bring more prospects into your business? As the marketing maestro at Acapella, this is what I do. My clients view me as an extension of their team, not an outside consultant. I bring the marketing tools that will fit your business. My clients benefit from a range of services such as internet advertising campaigns, marketing planning and strategy, and ongoing marketing support. Do you want to grow your business? Do you want to race past your competition? Do you want to bring more prospects into the business? My name is Kathy Brennan. I'm the marketing maestro at Acapella Marketing, and I'd love to talk with you about your business. For a free one-hour consultation, please contact me at 412-242-7785.
This Tuesday, be there as Dog the Bounty Hunter is sent to prison. This time, on the outside looking in.
I had to go back one more time.
Find out what made the star of the A&E hit series the man he is today.
I started to tell myself I can be anybody I want to be.
From X-Con to Icon. It's the A&E Special, A Man Called Dog. Tuesday at 9, 8 Central, only on A&E.
Once again, on the menu, we are Ann and Peter Haig talking about our experiences in the last go-round of Charleston. And we're moving on, though, from one restaurant group to the other. And I have noted here, this is Snob. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I could do that. The funny part about it is there are lots and lots of restaurants in Charleston. By now, you're aware of that because it's a town that attracts a lot of visitors and it has a population that's also very interested in food. But the two biggest groups are Hospitality Management Group, which is Magnolia's, Blossom, Cypress. And then the other group is called Maverick Southern Kitchens, and they have two fine restaurants in Charleston and another one in Greenville, South Carolina, which we're going to soon, by the way. But we were at High Cotton, which is Maverick Southern Kitchens' fine dining restaurant just down the street from Cypress, during the Charleston Food and Wine Festival, where we had the pleasure of having John Besh from New Orleans cook with the chef de cuisine at that restaurant. And just up the street, the restaurant which had won Best Restaurant in Charleston for the first time after a long time in business, called Snob. But Snob stands for Slightly North Abroad. And the people that we ate with at High Cotton back in February said, you know, the best restaurant in Charleston, the best kept secret is Slightly North Abroad. You absolutely have to go there. So, of course, we absolutely had to go there, and we met Chef Frank Lee, who's a real character.
Oh, wasn't he?
Frank Lee, who's executive chef of Slightly North Abroad, is a fascinating person. In fact, Frank, I don't know anything that just runs straightforward from you besides really straightforward talent and food. You've had a fascinating career, a fascinating background. Can you tell us briefly about the multicultural upbringing you had? You were talking to us a little bit between about like your parents and moving around and dinner guests and everything.
I was fortunate to have parents who had open minds and weren't prejudiced about anything in any way and raised us to be the same. And my grandmother was English and my grandfather was a biologist and my other grandfather on my father's side was one of the happiest people you'll ever meet, was one of the town handymen. And my parents had university schooling back in the 40s, and my mom did also, which was a little unusual in the South at that time. So we got a lot of interesting subjects that we're supposed to be well-versed on, and lived in Chicago and moved back down South. So we had a variety of experiences growing up.
Now, I'm reading this. It says, You are the culinary guru for Maverick Southern Kitchens and the inspiration behind the creative approach to cooking that's become a Maverick trademark. What is Maverick Kitchens?
Maverick Kitchens basically is a business that my two partners and I have formed that is an umbrella company for all the restaurants that have grown out of Slightly North Abroad. All things have sprung from Slightly North Abroad.
Which is an acronym for snob?
If you say so. I call it Slightly North Abroad. But it's the wellspring. It's the creative force that is it's sprung all our businesses.
Now, what attracted you with all these different opportunities to cooking?
Cooking was an accident for me. It's a long story. I don't know if you have time, but right out of high school, I wanted to be a psychiatrist. I was very interested in psychology and meditation and Eastern religions, and that led to one of our friends coming up right out of high school and said, "Oh, let's start a vegetarian restaurant." And so we said, "Oh, sure, we'll do that for the summer and go back to college." And then 6 years later, after it turned into a natural foods co-op and juice bar and Sprout Haven, it was. I looked up and said, "Well, I guess I'm a cook."
You know, nothing I've read about you mentions that. I bet you have other secrets too.
None that we want to talk about here.
So, okay, so here we are at Slightly North Abroad, where we're going to have dinner this evening, and I'm looking forward to that because I have the menus in front of me. And your menu also is not just straightforward and simple. You have all kinds of references to various multicultural experiences. Tell us about Pad Thai.
Well, Pad Thai was one of the dishes that I enjoyed going out to eat when I was growing up working in fancy French kitchens in Chicago and Washington, D.C. I was apprenticing and didn't have much money, so I'd always be wanting to find something new and different on my day off, and I'd eventually end up at the Thai restaurants, and they always had the least expensive thing on the menu, and what I could afford was Pad Thai. And I enjoyed it because it always had these little garnishes you could put on it, hot peppers and peanuts, which are pretty southern to me, and shrimp and pork and rice noodles. And when I came back south and I got involved in starting this restaurant, I still wanted to eat Pad Thai, but I couldn't find any place in town that fixed it. So I thought, well, I'll just fix it myself. And so I had to research the dish. And then it occurred to me that, well, you know, Charleston was put on the map first by indigo and rice, and rice was the big export that really made Charleston rich. Pad Thai has rice noodles, and we're known for pork. You know, it's pork and chicken and shrimp. You know, coming back in the 60s, all you could get was pork and chicken. Couldn't find anything else. And so I thought, well, you know, it's really a dish that has rice, pork, and shrimp in it. And those three things are representational of Charleston, and it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek dish. People always ask, well, if you're a southern restaurant, how can you feature Pad Thai? It's got rice and chicken and pork and shrimp. You know, it's Charleston as you get.
Chef Frank Lee, I was asking you, that is wit and humor part of your characteristics in your food?
Well, we want people to feel good when they eat the food, but one of the things that we really tried to do with the restaurant is we wanted to make au cuisine, French cuisine, accessible to people. We wanted the restaurant to be a place where you could feel comfortable and get really fine cuisine and be able to eat here 50 times a year without having it to be a fine dining special occasion, anniversary, break the bank, mortgage the house experience. And I think we've achieved that, but it takes a lot of hard work. And while we do that, we do cut up and have a lot of fun. And you can see that because we have a totally open kitchen. We're framed in a little with a big brick arch, and we look like little elves inside the Keebler oven or something. And sometimes we laugh so much that we just can't stand it. Other times it gets a little bit dicey, but and all the time it's like a show. It's like a choreographed dance as we spin in place like whirling dervishes, and the smoke goes up and the flames leap out. So yeah, there's a lot of humor and there's a lot of joy in the kitchen.
Well, the place itself, listeners, it's really lively. It's it has a fun atmosphere to it, and it's in a historic building.
Yes, it is. This building was built in 1808. It used to be the tall ships used to come in right to the back. The wharf was right there, and Market Street was a creek, and this was a warehouse where the ships would unload. And if you look around, one of the things we tried to do is to make this look almost like a Charleston garden inside somebody's house. So we have the iron gates that have been around for 70, 80 years and locally made, hanging, and we have wood floors and eclectic furniture and plants and flowers and this interesting faux finish on the walls and the exposed beams that were put in here 200 years ago. So and the brick arch. So it has this, and the Charleston rugs on the floor, the Persian rugs. So it has this kind of inside-outside Charleston garden feel to it.
That's interesting. Of course, I don't know enough about Charleston to have picked that up. This restaurant has been around since 1993. That says a whole lot right there. But I want to make mention of the fact that in 2006, it was last year, right? You got Charleston's Restaurant of the Year Award. Now that tells us a great deal that you are still fresh and on the top of everybody's list after all these years. Why do you think that is?
One of the reasons is that we try to feature our local produce, our local seasonal seafoods, and we keep pairing those things up every season. So every season we're looking for something new. Part of it's also the talent that's in the restaurant, the front of the house, back of the house. We have youngsters always have great ideas. And another reason is that there's so many good restaurants in Charleston, and so many good chefs, and so many good restaurateurs that you really got to be on your toes. You have to, you got people here doing some great food, and if you don't watch out, they're going to run you right over.
Now, the other thing I think we ought to mention, even though it's casual and it's fun, you don't cut any corners. You do all the things that a really high-end French restaurant would do. Everything's done in-house. Is that correct?
That's correct. We break the bones, we butcher, we cook a la minute. We, at any moment, we have 8 or 9 different stocks reducing down. That's a lot of lifting and toting and straining, and we make our own desserts. Everything is done right in front of you. It's an a la minute rhythm of the mise en place, keep it simple, keep it fresh kind of kitchen.
Well, I'm really looking forward to this. How about let's run your opening hours and your website?
Our opening hours are Monday through Friday. We have lunch 11:30 to 3 o'clock. And we're open for dinner 7 nights a week starting at 5:30.
Website?
Our website is slightlynorthabroad.net.
That sounds good. And you are fun. I hope we get to talk to you some more.
And we did.
And we did. And he is fun. And the whole place has a youthful energy
about it. Yeah,
it's
just sort of really kind of wild. And the interesting thing is there's a counter. Mm-hmm. And we sat at a table, of course, but there was a counter right in front of the kitchen where people can come in and just sit and eat and read the paper, and that's exactly what, in fact, people were doing.
Yeah, lots of people, singles even, just sitting there.
Yeah, I mean, it's got buzz.
It has buzz.
Buzz, 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 buzz. It's got buzz. It's an exciting place to go. And let's conclude this segment on Charleston with a reminder and a suggestion for listeners who...
If you don't want sweet tea, always order it straight.
No, that wasn't what I was going to say. We were at the Charleston, second annual Charleston Food and Wine Festival in February of 2007, where we met quite a lot of the people we subsequently introduced to you on the program, and the 2008 festival is already on the calendar. The dates are slightly later. I think it's about February. It's slightly earlier than last year. It's like February 25th.
Okay, because it was beginning
through
March.
Through late February or early March. It's not too late, not too early to put it on your calendars. www.charlestonfoodandwine.com from memory. I've been in touch with the people who are organizing the festival already. Remember, we were going to introduce Chef Chris Lee from Gilt to them.
Exactly.
And I did that, but I got an email back from Angel Postel at the festival to say that they already had their chef selected for the 2008 festival. Unfortunately, On the Menu will not be there, because On the Menu will be enjoying itself on the other side of the world.
Oh, that's right.
At
we'll
that
miss
time,
it.
We'll be in Australia. But it's not too early to start thinking about that and planning for that, because it'll be a party and a half.
Well, it will.
A party and a half.
I'd like to be all places at once.
Wouldn't it be nice?
Yes. But we'll be here next week. Same
as,
time.
As we are every Sunday, listeners, and we look forward to hearing from you and talking to you again, same time, same place, next week.
Bye-bye.
Jazzin' Around with David J. is next on The Edge, AM 1550.